Aloha, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Welcome to The Body Show. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but nothing replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. Today we're going to talk about something that a lot of folks may not have heard about, high-intensity focused ultrasound. This is a type of procedure that is now being done for a variety of different possible medical conditions. But today we are lucky enough to be talking to Dr. Herbert Chin. He has almost four decades of experience as a urologist here in the islands. And we're going to hear some more about what are some of the urologic ways that this particular procedure can be used and how does it help. So thank you for joining me today on The Body Show, Dr. Chin.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. It's a Monday, and I know Mondays are generally busy days. You've had a busy day. Let's talk a little bit about this new application, high-intensity focused ultrasound. This is something that I know a lot of folks haven't heard about. Can you tell us more about it and how this is potentially something that can be used for specific types of patients that have conditions that are in your area of urology?
Sure. Prior to HIFU, we've pretty much had an all or none environment. You took care of the entire prostate or you watched and monitored the cancer. This kind of fills a gap in between where you can treat a low volume. It's targeted for low volume, low grade disease. So it's an option of not treating parts of the prostate that aren't cancerous. And by doing so, or by protecting those areas, you lower the complication rates. The complications associated with prostate cancer treatment usually are incontinence or leaking urine and impotence. And it kind of depends on how you define those, but it can be up to 90% complication rates. The high-intensity focus ultrasound is something that is used for early small-volume prostate cancer, so it's not for everybody. But it's likened to taking a magnifying glass and using the sun rays to focus and burn things. So it it's about 10,000 times more powerful than diagnostic ultrasound, and it's focused. So just like a magnifying glass, when you put your hand in front of the magnifying glass, but not at the focal point, it doesn't burn you. It's just right at the focal point that gets damaged. So by using this, we can pass through tissue without injuring the tissue and just injuring the target, which would be the cancer. This has no invasive portion of it. There are no needles. There's no cuts. There's no scar and no radiation. And so far, in the cases that we've done, patients have done extremely well. No one has taken a single pain pill. The procedure takes about an hour, maybe up to 2 hours, depending on the size of the gland, but patients go home the same day, and it's been quite an eye-opener as to how well-tolerated it is.
So how long has this high-intensity focused ultrasound treatment been available? Is it something that they've had for years in Europe or on the mainland, and we're just bringing it here locally, or is this a relatively new treatment option?
It started in 1993. It was not FDA approved. And there are doctors, I know a friend who was based in Arcadia, California, taking his patients across the border to Mexico at tremendous cost to the patients and treating 20 a month for years. It became FDA certified in 2015. And then in 2018, the present machine that we have, which is the only robotic controlled HIFU machine, was FDA approved. So far, from 2018 on, there's been kind of a rapidly increased spread through the academic centers. I believe we're the 63rd installation. I believe every University of California institution has this, Mayo Clinic as well, Stanford. It's pretty much throughout the country, and now they're spreading to the private hospitals. So Kuakini and its administration saw the value and entered in a relationship, and it's a exclusive relationship for a couple of years anyway, to be the sole provider for this procedure in Hawaii.
So you mentioned that this is something that requires this particular type of equipment. So this is a robotic way that you can identify the correct tissue location to have that focal point just take care of the, in this case, cancerous tissue as opposed to normal tissue around it?
Yeah, that's really a great question. The people I knew in California had my same last name, so we jokingly always said that we're relatives. But I really wasn't interested in this procedure because it wasn't as refined as it is. And I think what really makes it workable now is the advent of radiologic testing that can more accurately localize cancer. Historically, if you do prostate surgery, 40% of the time there's more cancer than you actually thought was there on biopsy. Now we have prosthetic MRI or magnetic resonance imaging. And as of 2 years ago, we have PSMA or prostate surface membrane antibody PET scans. And that's perhaps the greatest breakthrough where it uses a dye that recognizes antibody in the prostate cell. So when you get a scan, and usually they call it eyes to thighs, so it scans from your eyes all the way down through the mid-thigh level, it's looking for any cells that have this prostate membrane antibody, and so it can tell you more accurately whether the cancer has spread outside or whether it's localized, and that's made a huge difference. So I have more confidence that if we say the cancer is just at this one spot, it's only there. So for the last 8 years, the combination of the ultrasound and prostate MRI has been used to do the biopsies where you fuse the two technologies and you overlay one over the other while you're doing a biopsy. So you have a very accurate biopsy targeting system. And now the PSMA will pretty much confirm that there's no spread of the cancer. And because of those, I feel more reassured that if we only treat what looks to be the targeted cancer, that we have a pretty good chance at cure in that fashion without having to treat the rest of the gland.
Well, it sounds like those additional advancements and the ability to diagnose a localized cancer versus one that has spread has really helped facilitate the novel type of treatments that we're talking about today.
Yes, and that gets you to, if it's localized, do you really need to treat the whole gland? There's something called a regret score, and they did a study to see how many patients regretted doing radiation or regretted doing surgery for their cancer. And a lot of it has to do with the postoperative complications that might occur, being impotence or incontinence. And roughly around 20% of people regret going through treatment. And it's primarily because of the postoperative complications or side effects. This has dramatically less risk of side effects.
All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and when we come right back, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Herbert Chin about the decreased level of side effects of this particular new advanced treatment, high-intensity focused ultrasound for prostate cancer, and some other potential urologic ways that it could be used. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Hawaii.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and I have Dr. Herbert Chin on the line. He is a urologist with almost four decades of experience here in the islands, and we're talking today about use of high-intensity focused ultrasound as a treatment for very localized prostate cancer. And right before the break, we talked about the importance of making sure that it's localized so that the treatment can be effective and not miss cancer cells that may have spread certainly beyond the prostate. But also, you mentioned that the type of treatment we're talking about with the focused ultrasound really doesn't seem to have as many side effects as the traditional treatment course did. So for those individuals for whom you have provided this service already, what sort of side effects do they experience, if at all?
Well, we're rather early in our series. Of the ones that have been done, no one's leaking. From what I've heard, no one has any change in their erection erectile ability. What's reported with other treatments, the radiation and the surgery, is incontinence or leakage rates anywhere from 1 to 40%, depending on how you define it. If you define it as no pads at all, and no leaks if you stand up suddenly or cough suddenly, then that's probably leakage is somewhere between 1 to 40%. If you allow people to wear one pad a day, then you probably say it's probably up to 10% of people who are leaking more, that needs more than one pad a day. With impotence, over 50% of people following surgery will complain of change in their erectile ability. And if you just describe it as difficulty with erection, you would say it's probably closer to about 85%. What numbers I keep hearing, it varies from series to series because it depends on what you define as erectile dysfunction. When you do nerve-sparing surgery, if you get any kind of erection, some people say that's a success, but if it's only a 5% erection, most patients would say that's not a success at all. So it kind of depends on your strict definition. But a lot of people say after 2 years, about somewhere between 30 to 60% of people may return to their pre-surgery function level. It's certainly not going to make someone better if they had trouble beforehand. It's a broad range, but with the HIFU, from what I've seen, incontinence rate is extremely low, like 1 to 2%. With the erectile dysfunction, it should not be anywhere close to that. I would say that it's probably closer to only about 3% of people that might have some kind of complaint. But it's interesting. In the timely release, the American Urologic Association had an annual meeting that just concluded today in San Antonio, and they announced the results of a study. It was the first prospective study done in France, and they enrolled 3,328 patients, and they're comparing head-to-head, does HIFU have a lower lower cure rate than surgery? And this generated quite a lot of buzz at the annual meeting because it showed it's very equal to surgery, but that the complication rates were much, much lower. And what's so striking about this is the large volume of patients that were in the series. It was over, I think it was 40 somewhat centers. This was done in France, and it was authorized by the French National Institute of Health. So in terms of cure or treatment, it had equal to surgery. Surgery doesn't have 100% cure. There's no 100% cure for cancer. But to say that for selected patients, you have comparable to surgery and markedly less risk of side effects is starting to generate quite a lot of discussion and alerting people to it.
Well, it certainly sounds like it may have found a niche for treatment for, like you had mentioned earlier, low-volume, low-grade disease, at least at the initial way that we apply it, and those applications may expand. When you look at what you're hearing about from the Urologic Society, do you think that there's going to be a greater role for this, moving beyond just low-volume, low-grade disease to maybe mid-sized disease? Would that even be something that's possible?
Wow, you're really sharp. There actually is a spectrum of treatment, and it started, if you look at prostate cancer and you look at low risk, intermediate risk, and high risk, there's a feeling across most people that really low risk disease can just be monitored and doesn't really even act like cancer. And so you can safely monitor those, but you still need to monitor them. And 2 out of 3 will never act up. And that's been shown in a collaborative VA study. It's interesting that it's 2 out of 3, because if you look at their incidence of prostate cancer, 30% of men over age 50 on autopsies. So 1/3 of people will have prostate cancer. But of that 30%, 2 out of 3 didn't even know they had it. They lived a full and long life and passed away of other causes, never even bothered by the cancer. So that kind of leads you to maybe there's some cancers that don't need to be treated. You can monitor it. So that's really a discussion between the patient and their physician. But generally, that's in the low-risk group. Treatment for HIFU primarily was aimed at the intermediate to low-risk group. But some centers are expanding it to the more higher risk group, which are the more wild levels of cancer. I think for multifocal or widespread cancer throughout the gland, it's recognized this is not a good treatment. If it's a really high grade or really aggressive form of cancer, that this would not be a good treatment. But there are several centers that are describing this as now their new epicenter of treatment for prostate cancer, that they're going to start here if they can and then move to other things. One thing about HIFU is you could treat multiple times, you know, if it were to come back, and not lose anything. You could go on to have surgery later on and not lose anything. It's also meant to use for salvage therapy for failures of other treatments, and then you can use this as salvage. So there is a movement to kind of expand the role of the therapy, the modality.
All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. I'm going to continue our discussion with Dr. Herbert Chin in just a few moments, and we're going to talk some more about where to get access and how people, if they're interested, can find out more information. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and I have Dr. Herbert Chin on the line. He's a urologist with many years of experience, and he's talking today about high-intensity focused ultrasound, a treatment that may actually be something we hear a lot more about in the field of prostate cancer. And right before the break, Dr. Chin, we were talking a little bit about the potential that they might be expanding the utilization to groups of patients who have the diagnosis of prostate cancer, and avoiding those that it doesn't seem to have a role for, the multifocal type of cancer or people who have a spread. Therefore, it may not be the best modality of treatment. But you mentioned that one of the advantages of using this particular type of treatment option is that you could do it again. So is the treatment one time for 1 to 2 hours, or do you go for multiple episodes over the course of a couple of days in a row or weeks in a row, or what does that look like?
Pretty much it's a one-time treatment. I mean, we plan for it to be a one-time treatment. So there's a little bit of a prep involved, and we have an enema to clean out the bottom because the probe does go through the rectum. And the patient's completely asleep. The procedure takes about 40 minutes, maybe up to an hour if it's half the prostate. Some people do treat the whole gland, although that's, I think, less common. It was very common back in the 90s when this first came out. And it causes more complications and retention and such. But generally about maybe 1 to 2 hours, when patients wake up, they go home. They will have a catheter for somewhere about 4 to 7 days, draining their urine. And then when you take it out, most people have no problems with urination at all. You can go back to work the next day. There's really very minimal bleeding. As I said earlier, absolutely surprisingly, very little pain. While it sounds like this is a new procedure, it's new in that this new robotic machine was FDA approved in 2018. Since this was available in 1993 and widely used in Europe, there have been over 10,000 cases of this performed worldwide. So it's not that brand new. What's brand new is the robotic machine, the use of the MRI, and now our adoption of it in the United States.
So I'm curious, we've talked about how this is currently being used for prostate cancer. Do you see any other applications for it in the urology spectrum?
High-intensity focus ultrasound does destroy tissue, and so there initially was approved for in the enlargement of the prostate. So without cutting, without bleeding, you could injure some of the prostate tissue, and as it reabsorbs, then your urine would flow better, and that has been FDA approved in the United States. Hasn't been widely used in that regard. I did go up to University of California at San Francisco to watch several cases and ask them about that. And they did say they have an ongoing study right now for that. So for urology, it's primarily for that. It can be used for metastasis, isolated metastasis, if you could identify it, like bone metastasis, just like radiation therapy is used. Other than that, I don't know of any other urologic use for it.
So
in Europe, it's used quite a bit for other organs. It's used for essential tremors. If you have Parkinson's and it's primarily the tremor-related type, you can treat that. For nerve pain, so neurologic applications, gynecology for fibroids, and the FDA in the United States just allowed that there may be future use for endometriosis that has spread to the rectum. That just happened in March. There's liver tumors, pancreatic tumors that have been talked about. And even breast cancer has been done in Europe, thyroid nodules. So application is, I think we're just beginning to look at it. But certainly with prostate, it's been pretty well established and now expanding.
Well, you mentioned the study that just came out of France that was describing about 3,300 patients who had this type of procedure in a prospective manner to be able to study them, kind of also tends to lend additional evidence to suggest that we have to take a closer look at this and utilize it for not just this prostate cancer application, but you mentioned anything where there's bone metastases, and that is that specifically from prostate cancer or bone metastases from any cancer, like radiation could potentially be used like that?
Well, I think certainly in Europe, it's used for bony tumors, period, even some osteoarthritis. I'm not sure in what fashion, but it has been used for that, pain management for osteoarthritis. So in terms of bone metastasis, I would imagine if you could use it for prostate, you could use it for any bony metastasis, with caution that it's not necessarily going to cure a systemically spread cancer. You're just treating that isolated lesion for pain.
Well, it's certainly exciting to hear about some of the different applications that could occur with this. Now, you mentioned that in 2018, the particular machine that is used, the robotic machine, in addition to the other advancements using the MRI for the prostate and the PSMA PET scan to determine if there's any other metastases outside of the gland, those have all led to the evolution of where this is now something that's available in the islands. How long or how many patients have you personally been able to treat with the high-intensity focused ultrasound so far?
Well, so far, we just started in March, and so we've done 6. As I said, it's not for everybody. UCSF, which is perhaps one of the leading centers in the West Coast, in August of last year finished their first 150 cases. And they do about 2 every week on one special day, so about 8 a month. And they get a lot of referrals from other places. So it's not for everybody. But there are cancer centers in California that are championing this as well. UC Irvine was the first center on the West Coast to do it, primarily with one urologist there coordinating the care for UC Irvine. So the volume is going to come, I think. And when you start, you want to be a little conservative because you want to see how it works out to a large degree. So generally, we're looking at the lower volume, early stage cancers. Personally, what I'm looking at also is our population lives longer than the mainland. You know, the guidelines for prostate cancer for the American Urologic Association is don't even bother checking after age 70. Because if you get prostate cancer after age 70, statistics say that you have less than 1% chance of dying from that. But in Hawaii, we live 8 to 10 years longer than that on average, because the Asians live 15, 20 years longer than that.
Well, then that's a reason for us to consider treatment options that might be unique to right here in the islands. I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today on The Body Show, Dr. Herbert Chin, and appreciate all the work that you're doing taking care of our patients right here in the islands. If you'd like to hear the show again, you can click on hpr.org and follow the links to The Body Show. You can also find us on the HPR app. Our engineer is David Chong. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. We'll see you next week right here on The Body Show.